Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Dalet Amud Aleph, six lines down. Gemara here is continuing to discuss the position that was raised by Rabbi Yehuda Merav, who says that people knew that Avodah Zarah wasn't real. They knew it was all a farce, but they utilized it in order to gain themselves advantages in other areas. He mentions Arayot, that they wanted to be steeped in Arayot, and the Torah precluded it. So they figured if they worshipped Avodah Zarah as part of those cults or those religions, these things were not asurim, or they even encouraged this type of behavior. And so for them, it was beneficial to engage in Avodah Zarah, but they knew that it wasn't real. But now the Gemara brings numerous examples. We brought a number, and then we're going to continue today with another, where it seems that the Bnei Yisrael were actually well engaged, steeped in Avodah Zarah, and even addicted to Avodah Zarah in some senses. That's indicative of a more emotional and deep type of connection to Avodah Zarah. And here we have another example of that. Tashma, Vayizaku b'kol gadol el Hashem Elokeihem. They called out in a loud voice to Hashem their God. Mayamur, Amri Yehuda abitem Rabbi Yochanan. Bai, bai, haino de'achrave lebeita, v'kalyu leheichalo, v'kedlino letzadike, v'galino leYisrael me'arayu. So bai, bai is like, whoa, whoa. It's the equivalent of aha in Hebrew. So it's like, whoa, whoa. This is the reason that our Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and that our Heichal went up in flames and all the tzaddikim were killed and the Jews were exiled from their land. And he's still dancing amongst us. So they are in shock that the cause of all these problems, which is the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, was still around and still causing problems after all the damage and all the destruction that was wrought as a result of this Yetzer Hara. They can't believe that he's still around and he still has permission to cause problems. Similar, if you know the Gemara in Bava Medikim, when it speaks about Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai in the cave, after he comes out of the cave many years later, he bumps in the shuk to the individual who told the Romans about what he had said and caused the whole problem for him all along. And he is in shock. He says, I can't believe this guy is still alive. And he takes one look at him and he turns into a pile of bones. But the same idea is that how could it be someone who caused so much pain and trouble could still be around? And they're saying this about the Yetzer Hara. Rashi says, it's speaking about the Anshei Knesset Gadol, not just the people, but the leadership. Klum Yavetei Lan, Ela Lekublei Agro. The only reason you gave us such an Yetzer Hara was so that we can get reward for it. Lo Ihu Beinan, Velo Agre Beinan. Let's skip the Yetzer Hara and let's skip the reward. The common expression is, neither your sting nor your honey. The Gemara in Brachot has a similar expression with regards to Yisurim Shel Ahava. Gemara says also there, many of the tzaddikim said, Lohem Velo Scharam. I don't want them, I don't want their schar. Batar Davikube. Gemara again says that was after they became addicted or attached to the Avodah Zarah. So there, they're not speaking about in the origins of Avodah Zarah where it wasn't so problematic. It became problematic over time. That addiction and that connection to Avodah Zarah deepened over time. As in many things or instances, we have examples of that throughout history as well as throughout the Tanakh. By the case of Gidon, where he takes the ephod and he makes it into a sign, later on becomes a problem of Avodah Zarah. When he first puts it up, people see it as Sish the Siman. But eventually, it turns into Avodah Zarah. We know that by Chizkiyahu Melech, the Gemara tells us with the Nechash and Nechoshet, Moshe puts it together really as a Siman originally, and then it becomes an Avodah Zarah. The Rambam, the way he describes the development of Avodah Zarah in the world, is a similar nature, that people used it as a medium of worship to get to Hashem, but they didn't believe that it had powers, or they saw them as messengers of Hashem, but eventually the connection to Hashem gets lost, and all that's left is the Avodah Zarah. Yatvu Tlata Yomi Batanita. So then they fasted for 3 days, Bau Rachme, they davened, Nafalu Pitka Mirikia, Dabakdiba Emet. A little piece of paper falls out of the sky upon which is written Emet. Amar Rabbi Chanina Shmamina Chutamo Shel Kodesh Baruch Hu Emet. That the signature of God is Emet. Now that has two nafkaminot over here. The first nafkamina is that God and Emet, in a sense, are synonymous. And that we know that God is just We're going to read this in this week's Parsha. Azino, Hatzur Tamim Palo, Kichol Derachav Mishpat, Kel Emunah, Ben Avel, Tzadik VeYashar Hu. That God is a God of justice, and there is no perversion of that which He does. And that when Hashem does something, He does it in a manner that's exact. There's no questioning when you talk about God, because He knows exactly what needs to happen, exactly what the right amount is. There's no too much of this or too little of this. God does everything in a perfect manner, and that's this idea of emet, truth, honesty, justice, all of that belongs to Hashem. The second thing is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was signing off on what they're asking for. They're asking basically for the Yetzer Hara of the Avodah Zarah to be wiped out, and Hashem is signing on that or giving His stamp of approval when they get His signature of emet. And so then they move forward with that. Nafak Kiguria Denura Mibeit Kodshei HaKodashim. So this is happening while the second Beit HaMikdash is around, and he leaves the Kodesh HaKodeshim like a fiery young lion cub, which is also interesting only because the Gemara also describes the fire that was on the Mizbeach when they covered the Mizbeach, that it was also crashing like a lion, the fire that was on the Mizbeach. Amar lehu Navi Yisrael. So the prophet says to Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, Hainu Yitzra de Avodah Zarah. That's the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. What you just witnessed, what you just saw, was the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah being kicked out, basically, being removed. So while the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah were holding on to it, Ishtamid Benita Minei, one of his hairs got plucked out or fell out, and he let out a scream that went 100, 400 parsot. Anytime the Gemara wants to speak about a large number, an exaggerative number, it uses the 400. But his call, his sound went out forever. Amru, hey, chani avid, what are we going to do with him? Dilma, mishmayim, rachamim alei. If he keeps on crying like this and screaming like this, they may have rachamim on him. The problem they're faced with now is they're in control of the Yetzer Hara, Avodah Zarah, but they want to put it away permanently. They don't want it to be it's hanging around, or it could be brought back. They want it eliminated permanently. So Amar lei Navi, shadyua biduda de avra. Put it into a lead canister, because you are ba'avra, and then cover it up with lead, the shayiv kale, because it muffles sound. It is absorbent in terms of metals. It's the best metal for taking away sound, and that will silence him there. Dichtiv. And now they quote a pasuk from Zechariah, which indicate that this is taking place in the beginning of Bayit Sheni. That has implications, we'll see in a second, but also in the fact that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah already, according to the Gemara, or in session at the time of the beginning of Bayit Sheni, question of what happened after that point in time, or how long was the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah around, we know from the Mishnah and Avot, says that Shimon HaTzadik was Mishayarei Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Vayomer zot harisha, vayashlech ota el toch haifa, Vayishlech et, there's no hay in the pasuk, Evin ha'oferet el piha. This is that evilness. And we put it into the efa, that's a measuring cup or some sort of dry measure. Vayishlech et evin ha'oferet el piha. And we silenced it with the lead stone. Meaning that that was what being described here, that they used lead to silence it. We're taking a pasuk in Zechariah and saying that this relates to this whole story. Amrei hoyo ve'et batzonu, nibayrach mea yitzra d'aveiro. While we're at it and things are going well, we already asked for the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. Let's ask for the Yetzer Hara of Arayot. Bau Rachmei Imsar B'Yadayu. Everything's going well. They got the Yetzer Hara of Arayot as well. Chavshua Tlat Yome. They suppressed him. They incarcerated it for 3 days. Ibao Beata Bat Yoma B'chol Eretz Yisrael L'chola. They were looking for a freshly laid egg throughout Eretz Yisrael for a sick person, v'lo, and they were unable to procure a fresh egg for this chulen. So Rashi over here says something interesting. He says that once the Yetzer Hara for Arayot was eliminated, he says, kach pasak chimum ha-zecharim mil-holid, that the excitement of the zecharim was suppressed, v'nekevot mil-elid, and the females to give birth. Now, generally, when you would speak about rayot, you would speak about sexual desire. So that'd be the desire of the male, and maybe you would have spoken about the desire of the female. The way Rashi terms it is, it's the desire of the male and the female giving birth, which is interesting. You might say that that is part and parcel of the desire or the sexual drive of the woman, is her wanting or need to have children and to build, which is very much embedded or inherent in the woman's drive. But nevertheless, Rashi separates them. It's an interesting Rashi. I think he's responding to the Gemara over here as to why there were no eggs. That is because the Gemara in Beitza says that any egg that is laid today was finished yesterday. So how could it be that they didn't have a fresh egg on that given day? Because those are the eggs from yesterday. Those eggs are already produced. Only worried about the eggs going forward. I don't think the question is as strong because it was over 3 days. Maybe they're talking the last of the 3 days, so there were no more eggs left. On the first day they had eggs, but after that they couldn't find fresh eggs. I think that might also be what's driving Rashi, which is that the eggs are either fertilized or unfertilized eggs, but the female lays eggs irrespective of the sexual desire. So Rashi has to explain why there are no eggs. So what he's saying is from the male there was no desire, so there's no fertilized eggs. For the female, there's no desire to give birth or to lay eggs, and that's why there are no eggs at all. So what happened here is they suppressed the arayot. But what you see here is that it has a problem, because even on the positive side, it's causing problems. Amru echin yavid, what are we going to do here? Nibaye palgo. Let's get rid of half. Like, cut it in half. Let's do something halfway. It says, palgo merukia lo yave. Mineshamayim, they don't give you half. You either take the whole thing, or you take nothing, you don't get this half business. Kachlinu le'ene, so what they did was they painted his eyes, or basically blinded him. Ahani bay, that helped. V'lo igre inish bikrovote, that people no longer have a desire for their close relatives, but it didn't take away the desire, obviously, for proper procreation, but also didn't take away the desire for eshet ish, or nida. I mean, other restrictions of arayot were still there, but the most problematic of the arayot, the incestuous arayot, that desire was taken away. All right, so now just make a little comment about this. We learn a number of things from this Gemara, which I think are fundamentals of our faith, and distinguish Judaism from many other religions. The first of which is this concept of the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. The truth is that the evil inclination is really not an evil inclination. It's just an inclination. It is a desire. And that is proven here by the Gemara, that the sexual desire is not something that is inherently negative or necessarily inherently positive. It is a desire. It is an instinct. It is a part and parcel of the individual. The question is, how is it manifest? How do you utilize it? The drive or the desire can be used in a positive fashion. That is to get married, to build a family, and use it in the proper manner. Or it can be used in an improper manner, resulting in arayot, ishadish, nida, all the problems that you can have with those types of sexual desire. In addition, you can see here that the world can't exist without it. The animals aren't giving birth, the chickens aren't laying eggs. I mean, it's a part and parcel of the natural order, and to eliminate the yetzer means to eliminate the way the world works. And so Judaism views any desire or any drive is inherently being neutral. There is no such thing as this evil inclination. The evil inclination is that many times those desires are hard to manage. They're hard to control. And that's what we call the Yetzer Hara versus the Yetzer HaTov. But unlike other religions that view those desires as being inherently negative, and that original sin and everything associated with it means that one has to abstain in order to be holy, right? That is not the way that Yadud views these things. Yadud views everything as usable, and the potential of such an item can be elevated in Kedusha and shrouded in Kedusha and used properly. And that's very different than looking at things in a negative light or as evil, inherently evil, but rather it's up to us what we do with it and how we handle these things. That's number one. Number two is that you see embedded in each of these items is a duality, which is that you saw that by the arayot, which is that the arayot came with two sides to it, the good side and the bad side. The bad side was the incestuous issues, the eshadish, nida, all the problematic types of engagements that could come about from that desire. That's one side of it. And then you have a positive side of it, which is the building of families, the laying of eggs, all the ways that it can be used in a positive and constructive sense. But that means that we'd also have to say the same thing about Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, when they kill the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, that implies that there must have been some desire that was the negative manifestation of that is Avodah Zarah, but there is a positive manifestation of that. And that means when they eliminated the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, they would have eliminated that positive side as well. So, I think they say in the name of the Gra that the association of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, the other side of that is Nevuah. And we know that Nevuah Pascha Yisrael, in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, this is the last of the Nevi'im that we have. The desire of Avodah Zarah is a strong desire to draw close to God, or get close to God. That can be manifest in one of two ways. That can be manifest in Avodah Zarah, or that can be manifest in Nevuah. At that time, you have schools of Nevi'im. People who are practicing or trying to draw close to God, being part of these schools of Nevi'im. We find that by Eliyahu, by Elisha, they have Talmidim, they have those that follow them around, those that are speaking to them, that they take care of. There are these large numbers of Nevi'im. And similarly, Avodah Zarah, their cults and their priests of Avodah Zarah and people chasing after it. If you eliminate the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, that same Yetzer Hara is the same thing that draws a person and drives a person to draw closer to God and have Nevuah. At the same time they eliminated the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, Pascha Nevuah Yisrael. There was no longer any more Nevuah in Yisrael. And that time-wise is actually makes sense here. The Gemara is quoting it from Zechariah, where it's the last of the Nevi'im in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, at the time that Bnei Yisrael stopped getting Nevuah, or Nevi'im stopped prophesying. As you see here, there is a loss. Along with the loss of the Avodah Zarah, was a loss of Nevuah. They came hand in hand. It was a single desire that had both a positive and negative manifestation. When you eliminated it, you lost both things. You lost not only the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, but you also lost the Yetzer Tov for prophecy. The last thing I would say is that here, when it speaks about the Arayot, that they blinded him, that they impaired him in some way, that people no longer have the desire for incestuous relationships, I say that there is possibly some remnant of that, which is that many times people, when they marry an individual who is either very similar to their mother, their sister, might even look similar to their mother or the sister. They search for people from the females that they've been exposed to. And maybe, just saying maybe, that's a remnant or residual of this original desire of incest that no longer exists today. But again, the Enshek Nesek Dola blinded him, so they took away that main desire, but there maybe there's a remnant or a little feature of that that still exists today. All right. So now, Amar Yehuda Marav, Maseh ben Achrit Achat Shaita Chola Biyoter. This woman is extremely ill. Amra Im Tamod Haisha Mechulya. This woman survives this illness. Telech V'Tavod Avodah Zarah Sh'Olam. I'm going to go out and then practice every type of worship, every type of Avodah Zarah in the world. Eventually, she's making a pledge to get well, like people do when they make a promise when they are ill. If I survive this, I will do this. They make a commitment or a pledge to Hashem. She makes a pledge that she's going to worship all the Avodah Zarot in the world. Amdo, she survived. V'halcha l'chol Avodah Zarah Sh'olam. And after she survived, she kept her word, and she went to worship all the different gods that existed in the world. Came and she hagiya l'Pe'or. She finally reaches Baal Pe'or. Shala l'kumrim b'me ovdim lazo. How do you worship the Pe'or? Amrula, uchlim tradim. You eat, whether it's beets or spinach, b'shotim sheikhar, and then you drink new beer. Umatrizim b'fanah. So both of these foods loosened the person's stool so that they would go to the bathroom. And then matrizim b'fanah. And then you defecate in front of the Avodah Zarah. Amra mutav shetachzor ha'isha l'cholya. She says about herself, she's speaking in the third person, it would be better if this woman ended up sick again, and that she doesn't have to worship Avodah Zarah in this. She couldn't believe how crazy this Avodah was. How could it be that defecating in front of the Avodah Zarah was the worship of the Avodah Zarah? Atem Beit Yisrael Einan Kein. You, Bnei Yisrael, are not like that. From the way Rashi writes it over here, Rav Yehuda Marav tells a story about this woman, and then now we come back from the story back to the narrator. And the narrator says about this, Atem Beit Yisrael Einam Kein, and you can see that in Rashi when he says, Rav Yehuda Kamar La, the Midrash Rei Dekra. Rav Yehuda is saying this part of the Midrash over here in order to be Doresh the Pasuk. It's a Nitzmadim the Baal Peor, What does it mean? Bnei Yisrael, when they worshipped the Baal Peor, it says those that worshipped the Baal Peor, hanitzmadim, the Baal Peor. What does nitzmadim mean? Usually tzemed means a pair or someone who is bound together. And over here he says, kitzamid patil. It's like the seal that goes on top of the barrel that is wax and then sealed in so it can't move, it can't separate. That's the way the Bnei Yisrael were to the Baal Peor. But them, advekim b'Hashem Elokeichem, k'shtei tmarot advukot zo bazo. Whereas their relationship with Hashem was that of dvukim, those that were close. Close is like when you have two dates that are stuck together. So they're stuck together, but they come apart sometimes. They can fall apart. It's not so tight or so sealed that they don't fall apart. So in this version of it, it's a huge criticism of Bnei Yisrael, which is that when it came to Baal Peor, they used a strong verb like hanitzmadim. Samid patil, which means a sealed cover, something that doesn't fall off, something that doesn't go away. I mean, they were enwrapped and so tied in to the Avodah Zarah, they couldn't leave it. That's a statement of love and connection. The other hand, when it came to Hashem, it only had Bekim, which the Gemara describes as two dates that are stuck together. Yeah, they do well, they will probably stay together, but they can fall apart. You pick up one, the other one might fall away. Over time, they might just fall away from each other. It wasn't as tightly sealed or as tightly unified as it was to the Avodah Zarah. So that's one way to learn it. In the bright, we have some of the opposite view. Anitzmadim the Baal Peor, kitzamid ayidei isha. That when it meant anitzmadim the Baal Peor is like a bracelet on the arm of a woman, where it's there, it's tied on, but it spins around, it moves up and down, it has some play in it, it's not stuck in place. Literally stuck together. That's more along the lines of what we would say today in the modern Hebrew, devek is glue, which means that they're glued together, they're inseparable in that way. And that's a much more positive view of the way Bnei Yisrael were connected to God in an inseparable way versus the Avodah Zarah where it was a loose connection. So that's the opposite view or derusha on the Psukim, and then review the Marav. Tana Rabbanan, Maseh B'Savta Ben Eles, she is Skir Chamaro L'Nachrit Achat. So in terms of the name, Savta, or Sabtai, which Rashi says over here, says Shem Yehudihu, and likely comes or derives from the word Shabbat, or Sabbathian, those that kept the Shabbat, maybe along those lines, but Shabtai. Ben Eles is, Rashi claims, is the name of a place, although it's probably connected to the Greek name, maybe Julius, something along those lines. Shiskir chamaro l'nachrit achat, that he rented out his donkey to this woman as a donkey driver, meaning that he was giving her a taxi ride. He was transporting her along with her belongings. Gave in shigiel at Peor. Once they reached Baal Peor, amrlo himtein, hey, take a break over here. We're going to stop here for a second. Ache kenes veitze. So I can go in and come out. After she came out, Amrla, Afat Hamtini, you also take a break here. Acha Kines Veitse, until I can go in and come out. Amralo, Velo Yehudiata, aren't you Jewish? What's going on here? Look, I am not Jewish, so I'm going in there to worship the Avodah Zarah. You, the Jewish donkey driver, why are you going in there? Amrla, Ma'ich Balaich, what do you care? Nichnas, he went in. Par Bifanav. He defecated in front of the Avodah Zarah, bikineach bichotmo, and then he wiped himself on the nose of the Avodah Zarah. Vayu misharte Avodah Zarah mekalsinlo, and the priests of the Avodah Zarah were singing his praises. Vamrim olam lo yadam shabdola zo bikach. Never had anybody do mahadrin min mahadrin over here. Nobody ever worshipped in Baal Peor so well. It took a Jew to come in and show us how to do it and how to do it even better than we did it before. In some ways, it's a very negative story because it says here that this woman who worshipped the Avodah Zarah was shocked by the fact that the Jew would go in. And that she knew better than the Jew that the Jew shouldn't be engaged in this activity. For her expectations were much higher for the Jew. That's number one. Number two is the depravity of the Jew, who actually then enters in and worships the Avodah Zarah. In the end, he does it the Mahadrin. That not only does he worship it, he does it in a way that's even better than anyone else has done it before. Okay, so it is possible. You could argue that he was doing it in a way that was the Bizui. We're going to see in the upcoming Gemara that that doesn't matter. And that's considered to be worshiping Avodah Zarah. It's true that you could argue that he was doing this in order to say this is crazy. Although, they see here the Komrim are praising him on how well he did or how good he did. We're going to see in a second, it's not an excusable offense, and that it was considered to be Avodah Zarah, even if he did it in this way. And that is, a poer latzmo the Baal Poer, harizeh avodato. Person who defecates in front of Baal Poer, that is the way it's worshipped. Afa gav de mikavin the bizui. It doesn't matter that he is doing it as a denigration. He's defecating because he wants to denigrate the Avodah Zarah. Doesn't matter, because that is the way that it is worshipped. Zarek Evan the Markulis, someone who throws a stone at Markulis, Zohi Avodato. That is the Avodah. Afagav Mikavin the Mirgame. He wants to stone it in the negative sense of stoning. He's stoning it because he doesn't believe in it. But since that is the way that it's worshipped, even though it's Bizui, nevertheless, that is the mechanism of worship. And if you do it, then it's problematic, even though your intent is the bizui. A number of things. First of all, Markulis. Over here, just note, the Tosafot brings from the Rabbeinu Tam, really belongs in the Mishnah, but he's speaking about Markulis. He says, "Oh, Rabbeinu Tam, Kilus Shema, Lashon Shevach." The name is really Kilus, which means to praise. That's the real name of the Avodah Zarah. El Shechamim Kinu Oto L'Gnai. They changed it around in order that it would look like it was negative or give a negative connotation to the name. Vikaru Kolis, Lashon Lag Vakeles. They changed it to Kolis instead of being Lekales, which means to praise. And then Lag Vakeles means to scoff at and to laugh at, to make fun of. So they changed it in that way. Armar Lashon Chiluf. Mar means the opposite of, or I would say Mar means bitter. You could say the bitter praise. It was a negative twist on the name. The Rabbeinu Tam says here that it's like the chiluf of kilus. It's the opposite of praise, that they flipped around its name in order to make it negative. It's an interesting way to look at the etymology of the word, although in general we do think that it's associated with Mercury or Merculius, which were a type of Avodah Zarah, which would say that that was the name itself, and not necessarily a composition that the Chachamim put together about the original Avodah Zarah or the original name of the Avodah Zarah. Now, the second thing is, we have a difficulty over here, and Tosafot already raises it. Even though a person intends to denigrate it, nevertheless, you still are, that's the question. The Gemara doesn't say what happens, it just says that even though you defecate the Poor, or you throw a stone at Markulis, that is its worship, even though you intend it to be denigrating in nature. What are the implications of that? Bali and Tosafot say, Ule ovda bebizui, and his intent is to worship it in a denigrating manner. Dilo mikaveinu levazot. See, it's simply meant to denigrate it. Halo afilu oved ma'avariya patur l'rova. Even according to Rova before, if you worship out of fear or out of love, we saw that Gemara, whether that was fear or love of an individual or fear or love of the idol itself, then Rova thinks you are patur. So if you're patur when you do it mi'avaira, then certainly if you do it levazot, if you do it to denigrate, certainly you're going to be patur over there. So Tosafot says, I don't understand. If he does it lebizui, if he really intent on denigrating, then he should not be culpable for worshiping the Avodah Zarah here. So he says, lebzuya means he wants to worship it bibizui, in a denigrating manner, but it turns out that that's the way that it's worshipped. Now that he's trying to denigrate it. And even a bai who says by avanira that it is chayav, over here he'll agree that it would be potur if it's levazot. If you do it to denigrate the Avodah Zarah, then you are potur. That's what makes this statement. You can see here there's a Rav Kiva Eiger on this, and he right away points you to the Tosafot back on Samech Aleph Amud Bet, which is this Tosafot about avanira, because Tosafot says just the opposite over there. The Bali Tosafot over there say, Po'er atzmo de poor, someone who defecates the poor, afagav de mekaven le bizui, chayav. Even if he intends it to be denigrating in nature, he is chayav. So Tosafot back there says chayav, over here it says potur. So it's a stira in the Bali of Tosafot. The Marsha speaks to this issue and explains that other Rishonim also had this issue. Our Mishnah that says, ha-po'er le poor, arizeh avodato, Zorek Evan the Markulis Zoe Avodato Mfarishla Afalgav de Mikavin Libzuya. Even though you intend to be denigrating, or the Mirgameir to stone it, Atakapashte. We read it in a simple way. Talo nitkavin klaula ovda. You didn't intend to worship it at all. Elulavazoto, but to denigrate it. V'chayav chatat. Nevertheless, you are chayav chatat, ho'il v'amarotah b'kach. Because that's the way that they worship it. He says in the Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah, all of them seem to indicate that that's the way to read the Gemara. It says, he's speaking about those people that get killed or stoned for worshiping it. And therefore, they're unwilling to explain the Mishnah speaking about a chatat, which is that even though it was unintentional worshiping of the Avodah Zarah, you can understand why you'd have to bring a chatat. You did the worship of the Avodah Zarah, but it was unintentional because you were trying to denigrate. That's why you'd end up with a chatat. So that's how they read the Gemara. To reconcile between our Gemara and the Mishnah is they qualify the Mishnah and say, Afagad mekaven lebizui, you're still chayav v'chatat. The Baalei Tosafot don't say that. The Baalei Tosafot have to differentiate between whether it was ovda bebizui, you were trying to worship it in a denigrating way, or you're really trying to denigrate it. If you're really trying to denigrate it, you're patur. If you worship it in a denigrating way, then you are chayav and chayav mita. And that's what the Baalei Tosafot are trying to associate with our Mishnah. The problem, again, is still that the Tosafot before indicated that you would be chayav for doing it mitkaven lebizui. Either you have to reconcile between the Tosafot and say over there it's speaking about the ovda bebizui, or you have to say that there is a stira, or these are two different views of the Baalei Tosafot. So now, Rav Menashe of Gaza lebei torta, who's on his way to bear torta, Amar lo avodah zarah hi dekayeh hocha. They said that there is this avodah zarah in this particular location on his way to torta. Shakal pisa, he took a clod of earth, shadabe, and he threw it at it. Amar lo markelus hi. They said, whoops, it was markelus. So now you threw the clod of earth at it because it was avodah zarah in order to denigrate it or to put it down. Meantime, that's the way to worship it. Amar lo azarek even the markelus tanan. He says, wait a minute, azarek even lim markelus tanan. He says that the Mishnah says even lim markelus, that it's done specifically for the point of being for markelus, and I didn't do that. I threw it in order to be denigrating, and therefore it's not really an issue for me. When you get to the Beit Midrash, Amrulei Azarek Evin B'Markulus Tanan. The Mishnah doesn't say L'Markulus, that you have to intend for Markulus. It simply has to be B'Markulus. You throw it at the Markulus. Whether you intend for that to be worship or not, you are still culpable based on the Mishnah. Afagav D'Mikavin, the Mirgamei. Even if it was your intent to stone it. Amrulei Ezel Ishkila. Should I go back and pick it up? As Rashi notes over here, Rav Nasha obviously does not believe that his picking up of the stone or moving the clod of earth would change anything. You can't reverse the action that was there before. You worship the Avodah Zarah, you can't take it back by removing it. But he felt that putting more stuff there or having more things there would give more honor to the Avodah Zarah. Therefore, maybe he should remove it because that would take away the honor that was being given to it by the pile of whatever was in front of it. Amrulei, echad anotna v'echad anotna, chayav. Whether you put a rock down or you pick up a rock from the markelus, you're chayav, kol chada b'chada ravka b'charvta shavik. Because when you remove the stone, you give room for someone else to throw a new stone there. So that's why it's seen as being worship, both in throwing the stone there, but also the removal of the stone allows someone else now to throw a stone there, and that's why it's considered to be problematic. Therefore, the Mishnah, which writes b'markelus, means that even if you're throwing at it to hit it, or in a negative sense, that's still problematic. And it's not like Rav Nasha thought, lim markelus, which means you're doing it for kavod, you're doing it for the intention of worshiping it. Even if it is done derech bizui, it's still a problem in terms of the worship of the markelus, because that is the way that it is worshipped. All right, next Mishnah, again, the Mishnah Yot and the Perek go back and detail one by one, go through the items that were listed at your chayav and skila, and then it spends time on each one of them explaining them. And now we're up to the molech. Anotein mizaro la molech, enu chayav ad shimsor la molech, v'yavir be'esh. The only way you're a chayav is if you give it over to the molech, and then v'yavir be'esh, and you take them through the fire. Masar la molech, v'lo v'yavir be'esh, if he gives it over to the molech, but doesn't take it through the fire, v'yavir be'esh, v'lo sar la molech, or they took it through the fire without giving it over to the molech, enu chayav ad shimsor la molech, v'yavir be'esh. You have to worship it in the proper way. You have to follow the protocol. If you don't follow the protocol, it's not called molech. That protocol is that you first give it to the molech, and then you take it through the fire. Rashi claims over here, which is, Mosro b'yan mishartei avodah zarah. Mosro, to give it over to the molech, means to give it to the priests of the molech, those that serve the molech. And then Vayavir Be'esh is the priest of the Moloch take whatever you've given to them and take it through the fire. So according to Rashi, the avoda consisted of two parts. One was giving the child over to the priest of the Moloch. And the second stage was the priest of the Moloch taking the child through the fire. Many other Rishonim, the Ramban and others, believe that part of the worship was to give the child to the priest of the Moloch. Then the priest handed the child back, and then the parent took the child through the fire. The Avodah Be'esh was not done by the priest, but rather by the individual who was giving their child to the Moloch. Now, the Gemara is going to discuss the Moloch and the worship of the Moloch. In Chumash, Rashi claims that the Avodat HaMoloch, V'zoi Avodato Shemoser B'no LeKumrim, V'osim Shnei Midurot Gudolot, Mavir Et HaBen Beraglav, Ben Shnei Midurot Eish. This is not about human sacrifice. The Havara Ba'esh means to walk through the fire, not to be burnt in the fire. The Ramban of the Torah disagrees vehemently with that and says they actually burnt the children in the fire. It was a human sacrifice of the Moloch, and probably following the view of many of the Geonim, that whenever you were involved with the Moloch, that you ended up inside the fire and most likely died in the fire, whether that was self-sacrifice or sacrificing of other human beings. And so that's a distinction in the Moloch. How was the Moloch worshipped? Was it really human sacrifice? Or was it simply passing through the fire, but no human sacrifice involved? That will become more clear, or at least you can bring evidence to both sides once we get later on in the Gemara where it describes the actual worship of the Moloch. So now Gemara says, K'tani avodah zarah v'k'tani Moloch. The Mishnah, in enumerating things that are subject to skilah, enumerates Moloch and avodah zarah separately. Implicit in that is, Amar Rabbi Avin, Tzadam Kaman Damar Moloch lav avodah zarahi. The Mishnah, our Mishnah, is like the one who says that Moloch and avodah zarah are totally different things. The Tanya, we have a braita. Echad the Moloch ve'echad the shar avodah zarah chayav. It doesn't matter whether a person takes his child and gives it over or passes it through the fire, whether it was done to avodah zarah or it's done to Moloch, you're chayav. The Tanakama seemingly thinks that this is a universal type of worship, and the avodah zarah of the Moloch is no different than any other avodah zarah. That's therefore, if you worship the Moloch or any other avodah zarah by taking your child and passing him through the fire, that is considered to be a problematic and you are chayav. It's a unique protocol or version of avodah that is only associated with the Moloch. Therefore, if you do it to the Moloch, you are chayav. If you do it to any other avodah zarah, you are patur, because it's not one of the possible versions of avodah that are considered to be universal, and you're chayav even if you do it shelo kedarka. That's not true of havara ba'esh by the Moloch. So therefore you see here that we have Rabbi Shimon Elazar who says that Moloch and avodah zarah are not synonymous, and therefore you would not be chayav for doing the performances of the Moloch to another avodah zarah. The question is, if it's not avodah zarah, then what exactly is it? So Rashi over here claims, elochoku lahem. It was some sort of practice, cultural practice, and the Torah was very makbid on this cultural practice. That's why it's written down to tell you that the Torah objects vehemently to this practice, and it is subject to skila. So the way Rashi writes it looks like it's chukot akum. It's just one of these practices without reason, a practice that was culturally accepted, but wasn't really worship. It wasn't part of the puchan, the word avodah zarah. It was simply the practice of the people at the time. Still have to explain why they would be engaged in it. It must be that they felt it was a good omen, it was good luck, or there was something positive associated with doing it, but not necessarily because they were worshiping the avodah zarah, or that it was considered part of the worship of avodah zarah in general. That's the way Rashi views it. Others say that it was a worship of avodah zarah, just not avodah zarah in the generic sense. It was a very particular worship that was associated with the Moloch. And still others suggest that there was no worship necessarily involved in it. It simply was a practice, and again, maybe not cultural in nature, but a practice that had some response or omen that they were trying to create, but it wasn't full-fledged avodah zarah. That's why you would have to explain it according to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon. And now, Amar Abai, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Chanina, and Antigonus, Amru Devar Achad. They both say the same thing. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Ad Amran. We just quoted Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon. Bechanina ben Antigonus, the Tanya, Bechanina ben Antigonus, who married Pnei, ma tafsa Torah l'shom molech, kol shimlichu alehem. Why does it call it the molech? Because it means anything that you anoint, you appoint to be a king above you, afilu tzror, afilu kisam. Whether it's a little pebble or a little splinter, doesn't matter. You can make a molech out of anything. Molech is not some particular form of avodah zarah. It is anything that you give or ascribe powers to whatever it is and then do this worship in front of it. It's not that they're wearing these items. Similarly, that they're worshiping in front of it. Now, Rava Amar, Rava says you're not right about it. They don't say the same thing. Molech harayi gebenayu. The difference between them is this temporary molech. The difference in their explanations, Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon thinks that molech was some sort of fixed procedure, fixed type of ceremony that was done, and they would set up a structure that was the molech. And that was a full-fledged structure or full-fledged type of avodah that was done. And that's where you'll be chayav. And there's no such a like ride, the roadside type of molech that you just set up temporarily or wherever you go. Molech was a particular place and set up for that particular purpose. On the other hand, he says there, Bichinim and Antuginos, when he's saying Afilu Tzror, Afilu Kisam, is indicating that you can set up a molech anywhere. People make these temporary molechs, or they have these roadside molechs that they set up as a Tzror or a Kisam. And therefore there is a difference between them. They're not exactly alike, their positions. Amar Rabbi Yana, Inu Chayav, Akshim Sereno, Meshartei Avodah Zarah. One is not Chayav until you hand over the child to the servicers of the Avodah Zarah, meaning to the priests of the Avodah Zarah, Shinemar. Umizaracha lotitein lehavir lamolech. Your child or your offspring, you may not give in order to pass the molech. So here you have two verbs in the pasuk, which is lotitein and lehavir. And that's what Rashi explains over here. Lotitein lacherim lehavir. Or it says, don't give it to others in order to pass through. That's Rashi the Shitato, who thinks that you have to give it to the Komrei molech, and the Komrei molech take the child through the fire. Others will see it as being totally separate, which is, lotitein is giving it to the priest. Lavir is, don't take the child through the fire. Tanya nami yochi, yochol hevir velo masar. If he took him through the fire without giving him to the priest, yeh chayav, you'd think maybe he should be chayav. Tamalomar lotitein, may not give. Masar la molech velo hevir, or if you give it over to the priest of the molech, but not take it through the fire, yochol yeh chayav, again you'd think he'd be chayav. Tamalomar lehavir. Lotitein lehavir, there's both are required over here. Masar vehevir, shalola molech, if you gave over to the priests, and they took it through the fire, but it wasn't the molech, yochol yeh chayav, you think you'd be chayav, tamalomar lamolech. That's the requirement of the pasuk. Lo titein lavir lamolech. It's particular to the molech. Masar vevir lamolech. If he gave over to the priests, and took the child to the molech, v'lo be'esh, but there was no fire, yochol yeh chayav, again, you would think you'd be chayav, nemar kan, lehavir. In Parshat Shoftim, in Sefer Devarim, it says, "Lo yematzei becha mavir bno bito ba'esh kosem ksamim bonein umnechesh mechashev." That you may not have anybody who takes their children and puts them through the fire. Mal halan havara there is with esh, is through fire. Afkan ba'esh, so too over here, the pasuk is referring to esh. Umakan molech, aftahalan molech. And just like over here, it mentions the word molech specifically, over there as well, it's also dealing with the molech. So you have a almost gzeirah shava between the psukim, giving you the information, passing the information between the two psukim. Each one enlightens the other. One that has molech in it tells you the other pasuk is also about molech. The one that has esh in it tells you that the molech is also involved with esh. And that tells you that the worship involves four parts to it. Giving over to the priests, taking the child through, then what they take him through is fire. And the last of them is Esri Lamolech. It's a particular worship of the Molech and not of any other Avodah Zarah. Amar Ravacha Breid Rava, Hevir Kol Zaro Patur. If he takes all of his offspring and gives them to the priests and takes them through the fire of the Molech, you are Patur. Shneamar Mizaracha Velo Kol Zaracha. It says, from amongst your children, not all of your children. We saw that 2 days ago on the daf on Shabbat, that it says, Me'achat Mehena. Me'achat Mehena, the mem tells you a subsection or a subportion of. So Mizaracha means a portion of your offspring, not all of your offspring. But if you take all of your offspring, it'd be potur, even though it is a kal v'chomer. If you're chayav for one, you should be chayav for all of your children. So why is it that you are potur? It's because this is a very particular type of worship, and emulation of the worship is what the problem is. If you deviate in any way from the worship of the molech, then you're not violating the restriction of molech, because you're not doing, you're not engaging in molech the way that you're supposed to do it, and therefore you're not worshiping the molech. Once you take the first child through, you're already going to be chayav. Forget about the other children, go afterwards. So he says, either he did them all at once, or he has one child, and that way you'll be chayav. Others also explain the possibility that even though a kal v'chomer is true here, it's a kal v'chomer, ein onshin min adin, we don't punish people through a kal v'chomer. And the pasuk specifically states, mizaracha. And that would accord well with Rashi's explanation that this was a chok. It was chukot ha'akum that was the problem. And so here the problem is emulating them and doing exactly what they're doing. You're not doing exactly the way they're doing. In the end, it's not chukot ha'akum because you're not following that practice that they do. By Rav Ashi, heviru suma mahu. If he takes a blind child through, what's the din? Yashen, if the child is sleeping, mahu, what's the din? Ben beno uben bito mahu. If he takes his grandchildren, not his children through, what is the din? As Rashi notes over here, livno suma o yashen, if his child is blind or sleeping, mi avi derech havara b'kach. Is that considered to be mavir to the molech? Because einu yachol avor b'atzmo im haya rotzeh. Since the child is unable or incapable of walking through himself, when you take him through, is that considered to be havara? Is havara only when the child can go through themselves and then you lead them through, or you put them into that position or help them through, then that's problematic? Or is it even a case where the child is incapable of going through, but you take them through, that you're still chayav? Obviously, the latter question is, are grandchildren and children the same when it comes to molech? So Mar says, miach tifshot, miach chada. Let us at least answer one of these three questions. Tatanya, ki mizaro natan la molech. The reason he's going to be punished is because he gave over his offspring to the molech. My Talmud Lomar, what is the puzzle going to teach you? The fish and Amar lo yimetzei b'cham avir b'no b'to b'esh. You may not find anyone who takes their children through the fire. In the other b'no b'to. There it specifies b'no and b'to. Ben b'no, ben b'to minayin. How do I know that it applies even to grandchildren? Talmud Lomar b'tito mizaro la molech. When he gives over from his offspring to the molech. So it uses the more generic term of zera rather than ben and bat. And therefore, you have a limud at least that all offspring, including grandchildren, are subject to this restriction, just like children are, because it uses the term zera instead of ben and bat. Mar says, Tana potach b'chi mizaro. The Tana here does something very strange. He quotes a pasuk, ki mizaro natan l'molech, ma tamalor. What does that teach you? Then he tells you the din, and he says, kamash malon, and he brings you a different pasuk, v'solik b'tito mizaro. And he says, oh, because when you give over your offspring, he quotes two different psukim, and yet he only brings you one limud. Why is it that he has these two psukim if he's trying to teach you a single limud? There should be two limudim over here if he's correct, which is that the pasuk in Pashat Kiddushim says, "V'im aleim yalimum amaret nehem minisho b'tito mizaro lamolech." Devilti hamitoto. So that's one of the psukim. Vani etein panai ba'ishu. Bichrati oto mikervamo ki mizaro natan lamolech. The man tamed mikdashilu chalelet shem kodshi. So over here, the Brayta quotes two different psukim in trying to describe what the loch is, and yet it only learns one pasuk. So my says drasha achrinoho. You're right. There is another drush over here. Zaro ein li ela zera kasher. I would think only kosher offspring are subject to molech. Zera pasul minayin. How do I know that non-kosher offspring, meaning a mamzer, would also be problematic? Tamalomar mitito mizaro. Any offspring. Zera is zera. Doesn't matter whether they are kasher or pasul. So now we have two limudim. One limud comes to teach you not ben and bat, but any offspring, meaning grandchildren are also included in this restriction. Number two is not only are kasher children, but even pasul children are included. So a mamzer would be included, even though he is a zera pasul. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Einu chayav ad shivenu derech havara. The only chayav, unless you take him through like a havara, then you pass them through. What does that mean? Eichidami. How do you pass them through? Samar Abaye, Shrago de Livne, Vimitze. They have a stone or bricked out area in the middle. So there's some sort of path or bricked laid area. Nura Mahagisa, Nura Mahagisa. There's a fire on the right, a fire on the left. And then you walk through the middle. That is the worship of the Molech, is walking through the middle of these two fires there on the side over this stoned or bricked area that was specifically made to pass through the fires. Rova Amar, Kemishvarta de Puraya. It is like the skipping of Purim. As the way Rashi terms it is, the way that they do it on Purim is that they used to be happy or it was an exciting time. And as part of that excitement or the fun that they had, they used to skip around. Whether that means just literally just skipping, or it means that they used to light fires or bonfires and jump over the fires. Whatever you think this means will have implications about what you think the worship of the Molech was. If you think that it was just skipping in general, then the Havara here is just moving quickly through or skipping through between the fire, that's part of it. If you think that the skipping on Purim involved fire and they were jumping over the fire, or they were making pyres and then doing some sort of like circus act of jumping through hoops above the fire, that's another possibility. Others suggest that they used to make effigies of Haman. And in Bavel, those effigies of Haman were burnt on Purim as part of Michiat Zecha Malek, or part of the fun of Purim. If that's the case, then that might be indicative of the fact that you don't walk between the fires, but you actually burn the child. The child is sacrificed to the fire. Or the idea being that you jump over the fire over and over again until you tire and then fall into the fire. Something along those lines. But obviously those have huge ramifications about the difference of what you think the worship is. It is, according to Rava, is he differentiated from Abaye because he thinks that Abaye says that you pass between the fires, and Rava is saying, no, you end up in the fire? Or is Rava just saying the way that you pass through the fire is different? You're saying you walk between the fire. I'm saying you skip between the fire, you jump over the fire. That's the difference between them, but neither of them think that you end up in the fire. You can read Rava in either of those ways. It's all dependent on what you think Mishavarta the Puraya means. Tanya Kavata de Rava, we have a bride that supports Rava. Enu chayav at shivenu derech havara. The only time that you are chayav is if you take them through there, derech havara. Passing through in whatever way that means, havara, ayavira beregel patur. On the other hand, if you walk it through, then that's not considered to be havara, and you are patur. So there you see that the braita distinguishes between just walking through and havara, passing through, which is either engendered by skipping or jumping to get through there. Veinu chayav el al yotzei yirecho. And he's also only chayav on his own offspring, those that have descended from him. Hakeit said, "B'no b'to chayav, aviv imo achim v'achoto patur." It's not about any relative. It's only your offspring that are subject to this restriction. If it's a brother, a mother, a father, even though they're relatives, that's not considered to be worshiping of the Molech. It's only the offspring that are considered to be a part of the worship of the Avodah Zarah. It's not children to preclude grandchildren. It's children preclude other relatives like brother, mother, father. So it would include grandchildren because we're still using the generic term zera, which would be any offspring. Yotzei Yerech doesn't always mean direct children. It means direct descendants of the individual. So anybody in that lineage. Hevir atzmo, if a person takes himself through the fire, patur. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, mechayev. Lazar, Rabbi Shimon says you are chayav. From this machloket over here between the Tanakhama, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, it seems like you didn't get burnt up in the Molech. Because if you were burnt up in the Molech, there'd be nothing to speak about in terms of putting this person to death or being chayav mitah. He'd be dead already. The fact that there is a death penalty afterwards shows you that whatever was in the procedure did not result in death, because Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says you're chayav mitah afterwards, whereas the Tanakhama says you are patur. Rambam says, Echad the Molech, this is what we quoted from this clip, from this break that was we quoted before. The Tanakhama believes it doesn't matter if you do this procedure to Molech or to any Avodah Zarah, you are Chayav. Lazar Rabbi Shimon Omer, La Molech Chayav, Shlo La Molech Patur. This is uniquely situated or positioned for the Molech. If you do it for the Molech, you are Chayav. If you do it for any other Avodah Zarah, you are Patur, because it's not necessarily associated with those Avodot Zarot. Amar Ula, my time at the Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon's position? Amar Kra, lo yimatzei becha, ma'avir b'no b'to la molech, becha ba'atzmecha. B'cha means even yourself. We had a machloket before between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon as to whether if you are passing yourself through the molech, are you chayav? That machloket is now, according to Ula, based on the pasuk, which says, lo yimatzei b'cha. B'cha b'atzmecha means even from yourself. Even if you yourself are going through the fire, you'll still be culpable. Rabbanan lo darshi b'cha. Rabbanan are not doresh the word b'cha v'atznan. V'mishnah, aveda tov, aveda taviv. The person has a choice whether to take care of it, something that he lost, take something that his father lost, shelo kodemet, his takes precedence. V'amrina and maitaima, the Gemara there in Bava Metzia asks, why is it that your aveda takes precedence over your father's aveda? Don't you have a responsibility of kibud aveim? V'amr Yehuda amar Kra, the pasuk says, efes ki lo yeh b'cha evyon. So here again, he's darshaning b'cha evyon. That there should not be an evyon amongst you, included in b'cha. You should not make yourself impoverished or make yourself into an evyon. For that reason, you should take precedence in these monetary issues over the father. And if it's your aveda and his aveda, you'd look for your aveda first, you take care of your aveda first. So now you say, shalom kodemet l'shel kol adam. The pasuk is indicating that for you, or whatever your needs are, take precedence over anybody else. So now you see the word b'cha over there, and nobody disagrees with that. Limud, the chachamim agree over there. You see we're darshaning the word b'cha to teach you that it even includes yourself. B'cha evyon. So why are you saying the rabbanan aren't those shebecha? Where it says, no. Hatam mi efes. You misunderstood. The limud is not from the b'cha over there. The limud is from the word efes, which Rashi over here translates, yiktev efes lazara ato. Klomar efes v'chadel v'kale. Desist and stop. Aniyut mimcha. Eliminate poverty from amongst you. Efesh loshon chadla v'klaya. To stop or to wipe out. You should wipe out poverty from amongst you. Well, the primary person that you need to do that with is yourself. That's the person you have the most control over. First, eliminate your own poverty. Then you'll take care of other people's poverty. And that is kiyofes kesef. Or the word efes is also used by the meraglim. And over there, also it means something similar, which means but or rak. It's some sort of miut, which tells you you have to exclude something from this. And what is it telling you? Efes, that the exclusion is that you don't take care of others. You don't prevent others from becoming aniim when you yourself are going to be becoming an aniim from doing that. Right now, Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina, Shalosh kretot b'avodah zarah lama. Why are there three times karet mentioned by avodah zarah? Twice by the Moloch it says that there is karet, and by Yifrachav and Parsha Kedoshim, v'ani antene panai b'ishahu v'yichrati oto mikerv amo, ki mizaro natan l'molech, namantan meid mikdashi l'chalel l'chem kodshi, v'samti ani panai b'ishahu mishpachto v'yichrati oto v'et kol azunim acharav. There's no tachrei ha-molech mikerv amam. So both of those are written by the Moloch, v'ashlishit, and the third one is in shlach l'cha, by the korbanot, chataot, for avodah zarah that are found in Parshat Shlach Lecha, it says, ki dvar Hashem baza, bet mitzvato hefar, hikarei tikarei, the nefesh ha'i avonah ba. And didn't we have an opinion before that said Molech is not avodah zarah? So how can you say now that there are shlosh kretot by avodah zarah if they're found by the Molech? It says, mikom akom kari le avodah zarah. Rashi says, despite that, they still call it avodah zarah. It's a little bit different than what Rashi said on Amud Aleph, where he thought it was a chok, or it was some sort of chukot da'akam. Over here, he's indicating that it really is some form of avodah zarah. So those are the three times karet is mentioned by avodah zarah. The question is, why do you need that? Achad lekadarka. Wanted to teach you, if you worship the avodah zarah in its normal fashion, you're chayav karet. Achad shelo kadarka. One is for not the normal way to do it. When you do one of the universal worships, like zibuach, kitur, nisuch, which we mentioned before, then it applies to any worship of avodah zarah, and you'll be subject to karet. Rashi over here says that there's an extra karet by the molech, that's the second karet, but then the third karet is vechat la molech, and one is to teach you about molech itself, that it's subject to karet. According to the one who says that molech is avodah zarah, karet b'molech lamali. Then why do you need karet to be written by molech? So according to the first way we read it, you had one karet for kedarka, One karet shelo kedarka, and one karet for the molech. If you think molech and avodah zarah are the same thing, then that last karet is extraneous, because you don't need karet by molech, it is avodah zarah. So what does that last karet come to teach you? It comes to teach you that molech shelo kedarka is still problematic. Molech, you're going to be chayav for when you do it to other types of avodah zarah, not just to this avodah zarah. But if you do molech, which is not the normal way to worship this avodah zarah, you're still going to be chayav, because all we have so far is zibuach mikitur, those avodot that are in bifnim, dotil Hashem levado, those you are restricted from doing to any avodah zarah. Now we're teaching us that even the molech, being mavir b'no bito, to a non-molech avodah zarah, is also considered to be culpable. Mandamar megadeif avodah zarah, karet b'megadeif lomali. According to the one who says that a megadeif is a subset of avodah zarah, position of Rabbi Yishmael, ki davar Hashem baza that mitzvotah heifar hikaret tikaret the nefesh abon haba. The only thing is that the pasuk for hikaret tikaret says v'nefesh asher taseh biyad ramah min ha'izrach u min ha'geret Hashem hu migadeif v'nichrata nefesh mikarev ama. Then why do you need karet by migadeif? If migadeif is a subset of avodah zarah, we already know about karet from avodah zarah. Why do you need a separate statement of karet by the migadeif? L'kedetanya, you need it for this limud, which is that pasuk and shlach of hikaret, tikaret. Hikaret, tikaret is a duplication of loshon. Hikaret v'lam azeh, tikaret v'lam aba, divrei Rabbi Akiva. That is the view of Rabbi Akiva, that hikaret, tikaret, the dual loshon, comes to teach you that not only are you cut off in this world, but you're also cut off in the world to come. You're not only going to die early in olam azeh, but tikaret, you'll be cut off in olam aba. Which is that the karet of olam haba means the severing of the neshama from the everlasting, meaning being connected to God. The Rambam brings this down as the punishment of karet, or part and parcel of the punishment of karet. The Ramban is bothered by that, because he says that that's very severe punishment. That is a permanent state of being, and how could it be that that is the punishment for every karet that we see in the Torah? Eating chalev is not the same as worshiping avodah zarah. Why should the karet of chalev end up or give you a loss not only in this world but in the world to come, where you're totally cut off, versus avodah zarah, which is an abrogation of the fundamental of the faith? And so therefore the Ramban differentiates and says that not every karet is the same. Some karet means simply that you will go without children. There's some karet means that you will die early or your children will die early. There is also a karet which means permanent severing of the relationship with God. That's only reserved for the karet that is associated with the most stringent of averot. So for Rabbi Akiva, it's not an issue because migadeif is part of Birkat Hashem, and therefore the nichrita that is mentioned by migadeif is not necessarily associated with the avodah zarah. Devar Hashem bazav it's mitoi far might be going back earlier part of the pasuk where it's separate from migadeif, and that's going on the avodah zarah. So there he has the ikaret, tikaret over here, as well as the two words of karet that are found by the molech. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel, who thinks that migadeif is also avodah zarah, now you have an extra karet that is written by avodah zarah. Amarlo Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says to Rabbi Akiva, log far ne'mar v'nichrita. Doesn't it already say that you're going to be cut off? V'chei shlosha olamim yesh. Are there really three worlds? Hikaret, tikaret, that's fine. But now what are you going to do with menichrita? You have too many words of karet over here, as if you're going to be cut off from three different worlds. Now Rashi over here says, Rabbi Shmuel loved the Rabbi Akiva parich. Rabbi Shmuel is not asking Rabbi Akiva this question because Rabbi Akiva's view is that migadeif is birkat Hashem. If migadeif is birkat Hashem, then you don't have karet from that pasuk and shlach associated with the avodah zarah. The problem is for Rabbi Shmuel himself. It's as if it's a rhetorical question, because Rabbi Shmuel believes that migadeif there is avodah zarah. And if you go with the drusha that Rabbi Akiva gives of hikaret tikaret, for Rabbi Shmuel, now you run into a problem, because you have too many karets that are mentioned. And therefore, what do you do with it? Ella, v'nichrata b'olam hazeh, nichrata is for this world. Hikaret is olam haba, tikaret dibra Torah kelashon b'nei adam. That last duplication or extraneous word of hakikaret is not to teach you another limud, but that's the normal style. It's a literary style of the Torah. This is a common argument that goes on between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Many times Rabbi Shmuel rejects Rabbi Akiva's limud because he says, Tibre Torah, Kalashon B'nei Adam. What are you doing, Rabbi Akiva? And we know Rabbi Akiva is the ultimate darshan. He's the resh, even from the tagim, atav, the letters, everything. And so too, and he sees an extra word in the Torah. He says, that's available for a drasha. We have to do something with it. Rishmal says, Rabbi Akiva, you're not understanding. The Torah has a literary style, and you're only doresh things that are really extraneous. If the additional word comes about because that's the style of writing, that doesn't mean you have to have a limud from it. And so they have this machloket all over Shas. But here again, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that that last ikarit, even though it's extraneous, is not necessarily meaningful because Dibra Torah, kelushon b'nei Adam. Okay, we're going to stop here by the bottom of Samech Dalet Amud Bet.